All right, and I will count us down here in 3, 2, 1. Joining me this morning, Jim Rosenhaus from the Cleveland Indians. Jim, thank you so much for taking a couple minutes here this morning to chat with me. Now, I wanted to start just kind of looking back on a year that, you know, we were a little unsure whatever actually happened, the months and weeks leading up to the season with the negotiations between Major League Baseball and the players. It was a little ugly, and the fans certainly were not happy with how things were going with that. But we did end up getting a season, and as we marched through the postseason here, unfortunately, our Indians no longer in it. But it was a lot of fun this season, and it was nice to, I think, salvage a season of some sort.
Yeah, you know, I think that's what baseball is hoping. Obviously, it took a while to get there, but they've gotten the season in, and really, Rocco, what it comes down to is they really need to get the postseason in, and I think they will. It looks like everything's going well in terms of staying away from teams that are impacted by COVID. I mean, that really was the first couple of weeks of the regular season, but nothing too serious after that. So the biggest key is to get a big pot of revenue from the TV money is completing the postseason, and I think they will. So, you know, I think that was the goal, to try and recover as much of the lost revenue as possible. There still are going to be major, major losses for baseball as an industry, but at least they were able to get some games in, give the fans a season, something to at least follow on a daily basis like they normally would, even if it wasn't the normal amount of games. So I think from that standpoint, things did work out well, and you know, the postseason games have been you know, compelling and all that kind of stuff that you normally expect, albeit with no fans. But you know, outside of that, I think they've kind of gotten to where they were hoping to be, making the best of a tough situation.
Yeah, you certainly do miss the postseason atmosphere at these stadiums with the fans and, you know, the raucous crowds and all of that, no doubt about it. But I'm right there with you, Jim. I think this postseason's been a lot of fun. Now, again, unfortunately, our Indians bounced in the wild card round by the New York Yankees. And, Jim, who would have thought poor pitching would be the factor to do this team in? I mean, 22 runs in two games, I don't think that's a stat anybody saw coming.
No, you know, it's amazing how dramatically different that was from anything we saw in the regular season. And in the case of Shane Bieber in the playoff opener, I think you could argue that was his worst outing of his young career. So completely unexpected and unfortunate, because the thinking was going into the postseason, the Indians pitching might get them further than a lot of people thought. And gosh, who'd have thunk that they'd be able to score 9 runs in a game and lose one of the postseason games. But I guess that's baseball, and unfortunately for the Indians, it didn't work out the way they were hoping.
Now, offensively, one of the guys who really shined in that very short postseason stint there for the Indians this year was Josh Naylor. My goodness gracious, he was fired up. He was hitting the ball well, barreling things up. I mean, it's a very small postseason sample size, but Jim, I can't help but get a little more excited about the future of that kid here in Cleveland.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the trade that they've made with the Padres, and I know Mike Clevinger had some injury issues at the end of the regular season, but you hope that he's okay, and it looks like he actually might be able to help the Padres during the postseason as early as game one for them. But, you know, you look at what the Indians got back, and you don't want to get too excited about one or two games, but certainly the last month of the season, you could see some of the potential there for Naylor in the way he approaches at-bats and some of the contact that he would make. The ball just jumps off his bat, and then it all came together for him in the postseason. So I think that's really encouraging and maybe a building block. He's only 23, which is really, really exciting, I think, for the Indians. But also Cal Quantrill did a nice job out of the bullpen. So I think right away from that trade, I think they feel like they have two nice pieces. And we'll see if some of the minor league prospects work out. There's three of them that, you know, maybe if we're talking about this two, three years down the road, that there's even more from that deal. So that's what you look for. I think the Padres are happy with Clevinger, and the Indians are pretty happy with what they got back. And certainly, considering the struggles in the outfield, Naylor doing well in the postseason bodes well for the future.
Yeah, I think that was certainly a win-win situation for both the Indians and the Padres, and it is nice to see, you know, some immediate contributions from the likes of a Cal Quantrill and a Josh Naylor, but also the prospects, as you mentioned, Jim, those guys, you know, you got to preach patience with some of the fans in waiting for them to develop and make that impact at the major league level. Again, Jim Rosenhaus, our guest here on the hotline from the Cleveland Indians. Jim, I wanted to ask you about Carlos Santana. A bit of a tough year for him, and what do you chalk that up to? Was it just not being able to get into a rhythm? Did he look uncomfortable? What was the deal with him this season?
You know, Rocco, it's so hard to figure because he had that career year last year, but it just didn't seem like he had the same approach at the plate that he had a year ago, where he was so good about really focusing on staying up the middle. And he would still pull the ball, certainly, but when you have that focus and that's your plan going into an at-bat to stay up the middle, he had so much success driving balls to both gaps and just not having it be home run or nothing, which seemed like that's all it was. It was either a home run, a walk, or a strikeout for him this season. I don't know how he gets back to that, if that's something that's easily correctable. I think if it was, he would have been able to do it during this regular season. But the other part of it is, too, players go through 60-game stretches during the course of a normal season, and you might not notice it as much. But when it's just a 60-game season and they have a bad stretch, it shows up in the final numbers, and they weren't good for him. So the Indians have a big decision now. Do they pick up his option? And have him back in the fold for next year? How much weight do they put on this season? Was it just one of those years in a shortened season in unusual circumstances? That'll be a big decision for them, and it may be dictated simply by the economics of the game right now.
Yeah, so many tough factors now, you know, added to this equation, because you're right, Jim. I mean, there are 60-game stretches in a normal season where guys will struggle a lot, and it makes it that much tougher to evaluate guys because, as you said, you look at the final numbers at the end of the season, and, I mean, they're still the final numbers regardless of a 60-game campaign or a 162-game campaign. So certainly makes it tough to evaluate guys, and they'll have, you know, quite the tough decision to make as far as his option is concerned. Looking at the outfield, you know, I read an article from Zach Meisel the other day, who, you know, kind of talking about the outfield, one of the least productive outfields in baseball history this past season, and again in a 60-game season, kind of a weird sample size. But are they confident in guys within their system, like a Bradley Zimmer, like a Daniel Johnson? Are they confident they can contribute at the major league level for years to come, or is that an area where, you know, free agency might be where they need to go?
Well, I think they're intrigued by both of those names that you mentioned, but I think that they'll try and go outside the organization, too, just to bring in some depth there, or perhaps, I don't know if they can bring in an impact bat. I mean, look, Rocco, I don't think anything's off the table. I'm sure you're going to get to this at some point in our conversation, but if they do end up trading Francisco Lindor, can they get a high-quality outfield bat back? Would that be a way to beef up the outfield? Because right now, you know, I think they're going to give Naylor a great chance to nail down an everyday job next year. I think they really like what Jordan Luplow did, especially the last month of the season. I think they're a little concerned about Tyler Naquin and the finish that he had, and I think they're concerned about Oscar Mercado and the season that he had. So, you know, if they don't make moves, which I don't think they'll do through free agency, but if they don't make trades to bring in outfielders, there'll be a lot of those same question marks heading to spring training next year in terms of the outfield.
Yeah, the outfield, again, just a big area of concern this past year. And I'm glad you brought up Mercado, because that was a big head scratcher this season. I had real high hopes for him personally, and it unfortunately didn't pan out for him this year for whatever reason. So that'll certainly be, again, the outfield an area of concern moving forward. We can just head to Frankie now. As you mentioned, it would come up in the conversation. And look, I don't want to just ask you the cliche, you know, oh, do they trade him? Well, you know, what's going to happen with him? But I just wanted to ask you, you know, if you really made anything of any substance with his comments the other day, talking about the organization. You know, is that a good indicator, bad indicator in your mind? What did you make of that?
You know, I don't think it matters one way or another. I just feel like, you know, I don't know that Francisco, and this is just personal opinion, it could be mm-hmm. completely off base based on him or based on the front office. I never got the feeling that Francisco saw Cleveland as his long-term destination and he was going to try and make it a career here, a la Mike Trout in Anaheim. I felt for a while that he's kind of intrigued with the whole free agent process. I think he says that last week that the Indians could afford him, but I'm sorry, I don't think at $300 million, if that's what he's looking for, that there are, I would say there's maybe five teams that could afford him in baseball. And I know the players look at it differently than the owners do. They think every team can afford everybody, but that's not true. It just isn't. The economics of the game in baseball are not the same as in other sports in terms of market size and how it impacts a team. The Green Bay Packers, under the baseball format, might not exist, number one, and certainly wouldn't be able to do what they've done. The Buffalo Bills, same thing. You know, or the Cleveland Browns. You know, it's just not the same. And I think because of that, Francisco Lindor, and he has every right to do this, wants to see what he's worth on the free market. Now, that may result in him getting traded before he hits free agency, but I think eventually, no matter who he goes to, if he does get traded, we'll test free agency to see what he's worth. And more power to him if that's what he wants to do. But I do struggle when he puts it back on the Indians. I think the Indians are okay with, you know, listen, Francisco's done great work. He's been tremendous for this franchise. He's a wonderful player. He's fun to be around. You know, what you see is what you get. And if he wants to see what he's worth on the free market, more power to him. He should do that. You only get a chance to do that once. Mm-hmm. And if he believes that's what he wants to do, not every player feels that way. And that's what, you know, that's the beauty of the game and that type of thing. So that is a long-winded answer to a question that I forget where we started. But I don't see him being here past his contract and perhaps past this offseason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and how could you not, Jim, at least be a little bit intrigued at the free agency market as a player, right? When you see these massive contracts, thrown out to, you know, the Manny Machados, the Bryce Harpers of the world, you can't help but think again as a player. I would think, you know, let me get some of that, right? You want a little bit of that pie, so, you know, it doesn't shock me at all to hear that Frankie might be, you know, a little more interested in testing out those free agency waters. Jim, we can close on this. I don't want to necessarily get into, you know, the long-term health of Terry Francona or anything, or get into a conversation about how long you think he could stay here, but I did want to ask you how you personally evaluated Sandy Alomar Jr. As a manager this year, kind of had a more... not permanent role, but really kind of got to get comfortable in that role, I think, this year, knowing that he'd be doing it more long-term again, at least for 2020. How did you evaluate him this year?
You know what, Rocco, I thought he did a real nice job. I mean, his record was very good under difficult circumstances. You know, he was an interim manager, but Tito was trying his darndest to get back into that dugout as he, you know, he loves the game, and he really... I think he felt in some ways he was letting his team down by not being down there. And he makes such a great impact on this organization as a whole. So that was a difficult spot. And Sandy, I think, initially thought he'd be filling in for a weekend. and then it turned into longer than that. Then Tito came back for a little bit. But then Sandy had to fill in again, and he wasn't sure how long that would be. That's a tough situation at the end. I will say that... Sandy did reveal at one point that, and it might have been Mike Sarbaugh as well, who moved in to be the bench coach, where Tito told him at a certain point, hey, you don't manage the way you think I would manage. He told him, he said, you've been in this game long enough. You manage the way you see fit. You do what you feel is best for this team. He's, you know, you've earned that. And I think that was very important to hear that, because it had to be intimidating. And I'm sure Sandy was thinking, you know, he's so respectful. When he filled in for Manny Acta at the tail end of 2012, the last 6 days, he would not sit at Manny's desk out of respect for that spot. So he would not go. He sat on a couch in the manager's office, but would not sit at Manny's desk because of the respect he had for the position. And he feels much more strongly that way toward Tito for everything Terry has done for this franchise. So I thought he did a wonderful job. I'm sure there were some points and times where people questioned his decisions, but they questioned Tito's decisions too. Mm-hmm. That's baseball, right? I mean, we're all managers, I think. And so, you know, I'm sure there were decisions that people were kind of thinking, what's he doing there? But he always had a reasoning for it, and it's what he believed in. And I thought he guided that team through a difficult stretch, and it seemed like the players respected him and played hard for him.
Well, like you said, Jim, everybody loves to be a manager on Twitter or Facebook or whatever social media platform they use. But I'm right there with you. I think Sandy did
that's the fun of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Like, you wouldn't have it any other way. That's the fun of the game.
Gotta love the social media input from everybody, right? So that's how it goes. Jim, thank you so much for taking a couple minutes here to join us here this morning. We're looking forward to what should be a very interesting offseason for the Cleveland Indians, and hoping for a fun 2021 season, hopefully with fans back at Progressive Field.
Oh, that would be the best. That was a different kind of summer and not nearly as fun. So hopefully we get back to some sense of normalcy next year.
Absolutely. Jim, thank you again so much for taking a couple minutes here to join me. We'll be catching up again soon, I hope.
You got it, Rocco. Thank you.